7 years.
I know. They're called doctors.
88.1.
Hey, it's DJ Cage, and I'm relaxing by the beach listening to the sounds of the ocean. Lame. Let's see what's on the radio. So forget the ocean and listen to the Industrial Revolution from 12 to 2 on Saturdays on 88.1 WKNC.
Programming on 88.1 KNC is brought to you in part by Raleigh Takeout, delivering takeout orders from 13 local restaurants. Dinner is ready Monday through Friday at 4:30 with fully prepared meals from Akari Japanese, Par Times Cafe, Players Retreat, Subway, and more. Ordering can be done online at RaleighTakeout.com or by phone at 919-834-2885. Delivery takes about an hour, and advance orders are always welcome. WKNC would like to thank Raleigh Takeout for their continued support.
This is Alice Cooper for RADD. There's a lot of things we have no control of in this world, but that's not the case with drunk driving. If you're going to drink, don't drive. Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives on, and so should you. Yes, we all got a long way to
go. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This is The Revolution, 88.1 FM, WKNC, Raleigh, Durham, Cary, Chapel Hill.
We'll be right back.
WKNC 88.1 FM. That right there was Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings with their track Tell Me. And before that, we had Thurston Moore with their track, or his track for that matter, Off Work. My name is DJ Steve-O, and I am sort of commandeering 57's radio spot here for an extremely special interview that we have. We actually have right here in the studio a man named Steven Wilson, who is the lead singer, songwriter, and pretty much everything from a group known as Porcupine Tree, who are playing tonight in Raleigh over at the Lincoln Theater. So, welcome to KNC.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yeah, good to, for you to be here, too. So, you are pretty much right on the tail of a brand new album release, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's called Fear of a Blank Planet. It's kind of like a, I would say, like one of those kind of like six-track, you know, LP-style things. You know, you really have a lot of long songs on it, a lot of other, you know, experimental kind of things as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've always, Porcupine Tree have always kind of made albums. We don't make singles. We don't even think in terms of individual tracks. You could look at the album as a continuous piece of music, in fact. I mean, the fact that it's divided into six individual sections is kind of arbitrary in a way, because it is a complete musical journey, and our albums have always been conceived as complete listening experiences.
Now, when you talk about a complete listening experience, is there like some sort of unifying concept or theme?
Absolutely. Yeah, on this record, most of the albums have a theme. This one particularly, more so than any other before it, perhaps has a very strong kind of conceptual linking theme that goes right through the album.
Mm-hmm.
Albeit it's a fairly wide brief. I mean, it's Fear of a Blank Planet. It's really dealing with all of the issues of life in the 21st century and the kind of alienation that I feel from the technological kind of computer, internet age, download culture, prescription drugs, the dominance of TV and the kind of lowest common denominator that things like American Idol and reality TV brings, and specifically focusing on how that's affecting young people in this day and age.
How so? You're talking about young people. Does that like adversely affect a generation of young people in terms of having an identity?
I've been actually accused of being quite patronizing on this record to young people. I didn't mean to be. I mean, I focused on young people because I think that, obviously, this is the first generation of kids that are growing up in this post-internet computer age.
Very true.
This is the first generation of people that think MP3s is how music is supposed to sound.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of horrifying to anyone like myself, who puts a great deal of store by the quality, the sonic quality of the music that we make, the production. Because MP3s are kind of a very compressed, very ugly way to experience something I've spent, you know, years of my life developing, this kind of sonic quality. So I'm very keen to sort of stress that it's not an album that's specifically aimed at young people. I think this is an issue that affects everyone. You know, we're all kind of tied these days to our laptops, our iPods, our cell phones. But it's just really the young people now, this is all they've ever known. They've been brought into this world of technology and this, you know, this massive explosion in technology that's come about in the last 15 years is almost unprecedented in any other time in history.
Very true.
This much change in such a short time, and I don't think anyone's really asking the questions how that's going to affect, you know, this generation.
Culture. For that matter.
And culture. I mean, we can see it's having massive effects on culture all around us, from music to movies to pornography. You know, everything's being affected by the computer sort of technology. But I wonder if anyone's asking the questions, how is it going to affect psychologically, the, you know, the younger generation? And I actually read a book by Bret Easton Ellis called Luna Park, his last book. And that was one of the most brilliant kind of examinations of how, you know, this kind of... this age is affecting, particularly the relationship between parents and kids. You know, we have all these expressions now, like buzzwords like bipolar disorder and attention deficit disorder. The thing is, I don't remember hearing those expressions when I was a kid. So what is it? You know, are kids different now? Are they less able to concentrate? Or is it just that we have these kind of buzzwords, easy ways to excuse the older generation, to give them a kind of get-out clause. Oh, yeah, my kid's got bipolar disorder. We're going to put him on drugs, you know. Well, shouldn't you just take more of a kind of, you know, responsibility for your own children?
For caring for
them. And I'm not discounting the fact that there are genuine, you know, conditions, and I don't wish to sort of suggest that's the case. But I think there is now a much easier way to be detached from the growing up of your own children, prescription drugs, all of these kind of conditions. And that relationship in that book, Luna Park, between the father and the son, Robbie, the 10-year-old kid who spends most of his life in his bedroom with the curtains drawn day and night, on the internet, downloading pornography on Messenger to his friends, yeah. SMSing, watching any one of 1,000 channels of crap on the TV, basically. And the very dysfunctional kind of relationship he has with his father and indeed with his own friends.
And technology is, in fact, the progenitor of a lot of that social awkwardness, even.
I think it has to be. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't see other... I mean, technology and the predominance in television these days of this kind of... Well, there's very much a message being sent out to young kids these days, which I think is the only thing worth being in this life is famous. And that's very much come about, again, in the kind of post-MTV generation of TV making.
Well, that's a major thing, like especially if you take a look in the world of music right now. Hmm. It used to be, I think, about 30 years ago. I mean, there still was a very strong emphasis on becoming big and doing really big things. Hmm. But I think at least in the last 10 years or so, there has really been a great expansion in that with the internet and with all of these promises of, being able to gain fame without really having to do a lot.
Right. The old Warhol thing about 15 minutes of fame seems to have really come true. It's the reality TV thing, the celebrity TV, the American Idol thing. Basically, what you have with American Idol is supposedly a show. Excuse me. Supposedly a show about music.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot think of another time in the history of music. Perhaps in the 50s, this distinction. But it's very hard to conceive of another time in history when the division between the music side or the artistic side of the industry and the entertainment side of the industry was further apart. People talk about the music business, but actually a lot of the time they're not talking about the music business at all. They're talking about the entertainment industry.
Right.
And there is a very important distinction to be made, which is that Porcupine Tree, a band like Porcupine Tree or Radiohead or Tool have nothing to do with the entertainment industry. Because ultimately, we make records to please ourselves, which is a very indulgent thing to do. But
well,
I think
true.
That's what real artists should do.
But then again, that's what art comes from. It's not like you're trying to please people, but you're trying to satisfy yourself.
Right. I don't believe Picasso painted paintings to please, housewives. He painted paintings to please himself.
Well, I don't know. I mean...
Maybe he did. I
probably would.
But the thing is that you have now a whole industry which is kind of geared... I mean, the major record labels are hurting really badly now. And I think the reason they're hurting is because they've geared all of their priority towards the entertainment side of the industry.
And have neglected the artistic side.
Exactly. They've neglected. And now you see bands like Radiohead and Nine Inch Nails both saying the same thing, which is we're out of our record deals now. We're not going to sign another record deal. We'd rather make music to please ourselves and our fan base, and we don't need this infrastructure anymore.
Well, in a lot of ways, that's what the internet, at least in a positive sense,
Absolutely.
Is doing. It's helping to provide art. I mean, there's a lot of chaff amongst the wheat and everything, of course.
Absolutely. No, and I don't wish to make it sound like I'm sort of denigrating the internet. I think it's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it as you say, there's a lot more out there now. The quality is still there, but relatively speaking, there's still a lot more rubbish than there is quality, and you have to search very hard to find the quality. The great thing about the internet is it has been a great leveler as regards bands that perhaps want to make a kind of more esoteric, experimental form of music, are no longer beholden to record companies to give them the budgets to make that kind of music or indeed to promote that music. And in fact, what we're seeing now is almost a return to the 70s model, which is that bands make albums, not singles,
and then they
tour.
Exactly.
And that's how they build up a fan base.
And they foster a big back catalog of good material before they get big.
And they keep faith with their fan base by making good quality music that doesn't kind of reek of selling out or commercial kind of concerns. So, hallelujah to that.
Absolutely. And I guess talking about all of this, why don't we play some music?
Okay, that's what we're here to talk about, yeah.
Well, we are going to play a track off of the brand new Porcupine Tree album, Fear of a Blank Planet. It's actually the title track off of that album. It is, I think, a really awesome, epic, kick-ass kind of track.
Thank you.
And yes, if you have been enjoying what we've been talking about and you dig this, they are playing tonight at the Lincoln Theater. Do you know who you guys are playing with tonight?
You mean in terms of an opening act?
Yes,
there's a fantastic band from Woodstock called Three. Really awesome band. They're an amazing band. And they're fantastic live as well, so don't miss them. I think they're on at 8 o'clock.
Very well. Well, this is Porcupine Tree, and it's only here on The Revolution. WKNC 88.1 FM. That right there was Porcupine Tree with their track Fear of a Blank Planet off of the album of the same name. And we're going to take a short break right now. After that, we're going to be back here in the studio with Steve Wilson from Porcupine Tree talking about his upcoming show and about this new album. So stick around for that.
Car Drug Company reminds the women of our community that the best defense against breast cancer begins with a thorough annual medical examination and a complete screening mammogram accompanied by regular self-exams. Early diagnosis means you'll have a greater chance for successful treatment. So schedule an appointment today at the clinic or hospital nearest you. And please remember, early detection is the best protection. This important reminder is courtesy of Car Drug Company, on the air because they care about the health of the women in our community. For more information, log on to CarDrug.com. WKNC would like to thank CarDrug for their continued support.
Programming on KNC 88.1 is brought to you in part by
Eccentric Festival 4,
a festival for people of odd or unconventional behavior.
The 4th Annual Eccentric Festival is Raleigh, North Carolina's own celebration of dark alternative music and art, October 13th. Featuring international and local bands Big Lee Chins, Skylab, The Goffsicles, Caracouple, and The Last Dance.
Including local and national DJs all throughout the night. On the web, eccentricfestival.com. That's EccentricFestival.com.
Eccentric Festival 4, October 13th, Lincoln Theater, Raleigh, North Carolina.
WKNC 88.1 FM. My name is DJ Steve-O, and you are listening to, I guess, the local beat extended version. And we are in the studio right now with Steve Wilson, who is the leader of a group known as Porcupine Tree. I'd definitely say a critically acclaimed rock and roll group out of England, right?
That's one way of putting it. That's as good as any description.
Yeah. I try to veer off the descriptions most of the time. So, the track that you heard from them before the break was a track called Fear of a Blank Planet, and that is pretty much, I guess, a catapult into this discussion that I think would be really interesting to have. And that is, that track really takes a lot of different musical ideas and kind of puts them together into one kind of track. Mm. You know, everything from metal to folk and a lot of other, you know, somewhat disparate kind of genres.
Right.
And I think with a lot of Porcupine Tree's music, you guys really do that. You try and actively, consciously put different genres together.
Yeah.
So why do you do that?
Well, you use the word consciously, and I'm not sure that's correct, because I don't think it is a conscious thing. It's actually purely a kind of product of the music that we love and we listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the music, but also movies, books, anything. I mean, it all kind of goes into the melting pot. I've always been really inspired by music that tries to be different or unique in some way. In some respects, try to create new hybrids by taking seemingly kind of disparate styles and putting them together. I've always loved that, you know. And I've always loved artists that kind of reinvented themselves from album to album.
Absolutely.
As well. Like, whether it was David Bowie or Frank Zappa, you know, somebody that could go from, like Zappa would go from a kind of serious classical record to a kind of dumb doo-wop record in the same year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And every time would confront his audiences and his fan base, his expectations with that. And they almost like learn to expect the unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as an artist, if you can get to that stage where you have a fan base that are prepared to expect the unexpected and prepared to go with you into new areas, that's the best place you can be as a musician. It's very hard to get to that position because the media and the music industry and the record companies will all try and brand you as a kind of generic band,
mm-hmm.
because it makes it easier for them to sell you.
Well, certainly. I mean, there's just so much industry pressure to, say, be like an indie rock band,
right?
Generic band with guitars or
Absolutely.
Something like that.
Absolutely. And one of the great things about the internet is the fact that it does, in a sense, liberate you from that. You can do what you want, and you have a means to reach people. But it's still hard because you still need to give people a reason to come to your website and listen
certainly.
To your music. So you still, in a sense, need that kind of necessary evil of marketing. But the great thing about, you know, I mean, we come from tradition of 70s progressive music.
Yes.
We're not a nostalgic band in any way, I hope. We're still very much trying to be contemporary, talking about contemporary issues and combining, you know, contemporary musical styles, like everything from death metal to you know, industrial music. It's all in there somewhere. So in that sense, we're not nostalgic, but we do come from that tradition. And I think the great thing about that era of 70s progressive bands is they were trying to create genuinely new hybrids in music, whether you had a band like King Crimson combining jazz and rock, or or Jethro Tull combining folk and rock, or Pink Floyd combining blues and rock, or Emerson, Lake and Palmer combining classical music and rock. They were all very different in their own way, but they all had this same vision. Number one, they were going to make albums, not singles. And number two, they were going to create new hybrids in rock music and try and elevate rock music to a higher level.
To make it progress.
To evolve, to make it more intellectual, and without wanting to, you know, make it sound pretentious and, you know, pompous, which, you know, some of them unfortunately did in the end. But
yes,
certainly when at the beginning, when it was a very vital form of music, it was massively inspiring, and it did really, you know, change for a long time the whole musical landscape, really until punk came along, and probably needed to come along, to be fair.
In a lot of ways, punk kind of took that baton in a lot of ways from the progressive rock
world.
Yes,
it did, yeah.
Like, you know, punk and early new wave and such were all very experimental.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, actually, the irony was they were very close bedfellows, progressive music and punk. Although punk kind of superficially loathed progressive music. Actually, you're right. They came from a very similar kind of point of view to try to create something new, to try and liberate music from corporate generic classification. But, of course, like everything, you know, something new and fresh ultimately becomes its own genre.
Like, one of the major things is that there has been, you know, a trend, I guess, growing since the 80s of neo-progressive rock, wherein groups are trying to recreate the sounds of, say, Genesis or Classic Yes or something like that.
Right.
What's your feeling on those kinds of bands?
I think it's pretty ugly.
Really?
It's a pretty ugly thing. Well, for me personally, that if you're going to be progressive, I mean, to be fair, I don't actually use the word progressive in relation to the band. I mean, no, I don't think any band really ultimately wants to be classified anyway. I'm aware that we come from a progressive tradition. Somebody that very self-consciously calls themselves neo-progressive and sort of references directly music that was made 20, 30 years ago. I mean, I have heard some of those bands. We've played festivals with some of them. I'm pretty ambivalent, really, about them, because to me it seems like it is a contradiction in terms to play a regressive, progressive music.
Absolutely. It's like they negate each other.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. I feel the same thing when I hear bands like, you know, Interpol. You know, they may be great bands, but why would I want to listen to Interpol when I can go and listen to XTC
or Wire
or Magazine?
Or something,
you know,
like that.
And I suppose the point is that a lot of kids now growing up today, they don't know the original band. So it does fulfill a kind of, you know, a role there. So maybe the neo-progressive bands fulfill the same role because people can't go and see Genesis and Yes in their heyday. They can go and see these bands otherwise. But me personally, I would rather be trying to make something that will be remembered as, you know, unique and distinctive in its own right in 50, 100 years' time.
And I'm pretty sure that's what a lot of the early prog bands were going for.
Well, exactly. And I think the other thing to remember about the original progressive bands is they never considered themselves to be part of a scene either. You know, they didn't. I doubt very much if King Crimson or Van de Graaff Generator or Pink Floyd ever called themselves progressive rock bands. They were just doing what they did. They'd kind of taken the template that the Beatles had created with Sgt. Pepper, more conceptual, more intellectual, you know, higher form of art, pop music. And they'd kind of carried that forward. And I think it's only retrospectively that we now look at that scene and say, that was the prog rock era, you know. And I think similarly, so I'd like to think that Porcupine Tree will somehow transcend some kind of generic classification in the longer term. And we just have a sound which people will recognize as ours.
So where do you see you going, you know, with Porcupine Tree in that same regard?
A million-dollar question. It's difficult to say, really, because we do just do what we do because we love doing it. And I know that sounds like a really glib thing to say, and I'm sure lots of bands would say the same thing. But we are ambitious in the sense we want to share the music with as many people as possible. I think any band that really believes in what they do ultimately would love to be able to sell a million records, not because they want to be millionaires or because they want to be stars, but because it means that they've reached people with their music.
And people understand and
people
become
connected,
a part of it.
And perhaps people have been inspired to do other things that are also kind of unique and experimental or whatever. But yes, we're ambitious in that sense. But we love going out and we love touring and we love making records, but we don't hold any great master plan in mind. You know, we don't have any sort of plan that we must do this, we must do that. Luckily, what's happening is the band is very slowly, and it is slow. I mean, it's been a real war of attrition. You know, 15 years we've been going. So it's been like step by step, piece by piece, and this word of mouth thing very much slowly building the fan base. And in the last few years, starting just beginning now to get some support from mainstream media in a very small, low-key way.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the one kind of bone of contention with the media is that we don't fit into kind of easy sort of pre-existing generic classification.
Isn't that strange? You know, the music media, like, say, Pitchfork Media, to cite a prescient example, you know, music critics as a whole don't like that kind of ambition, it seems. You know, the whole progressive rock kind of thing. Like, if you come out and try and do something ambitious, you know, you're liable to get knocked down by rock critics in
Absolutely.
Some ways.
Yeah, I find that very odd, too. I find that really odd. I've always found that the kind of music media's obsession with the kind of... It's a cliche, and it seems to be one that's persisted for decades, this sex and drugs and rock and roll cliche. That it's okay to like Iggy and the Stooges, the Velvet Underground and Can and that stuff, but it's not okay to say you like, yes, King Crimson, Pink Floyd. When in fact, in terms of invention and ambition, they're on a par for me. I mean, they're both... One of them is kind of more on the kind of, you know, that traditional sex and drugs and rock and roll side. And the other guys are, you know, are more ambitious in terms of their music. But that still persists, that thing, particularly in England, I don't know about here, that if you are self-consciously ambitious about music and if you don't have any sort of element of hip-hop or DJ culture to your music, they just won't write about you. They just won't. There's a few bands that kind of slip through the net. You know, Godspeed You Black Emperor and Sigur Rós seem to get away with it. I don't know how, but they seem, for me, they're as pretentious as any band, you know, in a good way. I mean, I love those guys, but they're very pretentious, but they seem to get away with it. The music press love them.
Isn't pretentious an interesting term? You know, it seems to be applied so much, but, you know, pretentious is almost tied intrinsically with ambition, which is a good word in a lot of ways.
Yes, you're right, and I'm probably not using it in the right context either. I mean, pretentious, I suppose, is someone... Pretentious tends to be used when somebody believes that they're overstepping their abilities in terms, you know, or they're going, you know, they're just going too far. And actually, I think there's a lot to be said for going too far. You know, I think there's not enough of people sort of thinking into incredible, ambitious, and just going, you know, going way too far. Because I think a lot of the greatest records in history have been records, marvelous kind of follies, you know. Sgt. Pepper and Pet Sounds, you can say, are the original kind of, almost the progenitors of the whole progressive scene.
Very true.
Massively ambitious records, which you could argue wouldn't have been massively ambitious if the people that created them hadn't believed that they could touch the sky. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so to be permanently grounded in this, oh no, we can't do that, this kind of indie rock mentality, where we're still stuck in this idea of four boys with guitars, drums and bass, influenced by the Velvet Underground, the Beatles, Oasis, the Smiths. I mean, much as I love all those bands, that's really tired, you know? You know what I mean?
And there needs to be a change almost in some
ways. There needs to be an alternative. I think that's fine that exists, but I wish the media would embrace more pure ambition in music and being pompous and being pretentious and being ambitious for the sake of it. I think there's a lot to be said for that. You know? I've been doing it for 20 years, so I should know.
So you hear that, Pitchfork? Lay off the prog bands.
They won't listen. They never do.
Nah, very true. Well, thank you very much for coming in. It was a great time to have you here.
Pleasure.
And we again have been talking with Stephen Wilson from Porcupine Tree. If you have been enjoying what you've been talking about and some of the music you've been hearing, they're playing a show tonight at the Lincoln Theater alongside a group from Woodstock, New York, I do believe, called Three, right?
Fantastic band, yeah.
Interesting name, too. Well, we're going to play one last track from your new album, Fear of a Blank Planet, out on Atlantic Records right now. I believe this one's called My Ashes, if I'm not mistaken. It's your second track. Mm-hmm. It's got a really interesting kind of orchestral arrangement.
Right.
And the whole orchestra kind of dominates, I think, a lot of these tracks, which is pretty cool. A lot of bands don't really go for like the orchestral kind of sound and Fear of it sounding a little bit too epic in some ways, I think. So, yeah.
Okay, well, that's exactly what we've just been talking about, isn't it?
It certainly is. Well, thank you very much again for coming
Pleasure. On. Thanks, guys.
And this is Porcupine Tree with My Ashes, only on WKNC 88.1.
Oh. Yeah. so much lately. I need a real winner.
Have you ever heard of
the Revolution?
What's that?
Bill, it's free. It returns big dividends, not quarterly, but daily. And the growth potential is unlimited.
Now, come on. Be serious. I have real problems here. I don't need jokes.
This is no joke. This is
88.1, the Revolution.
Those are promises, guaranteed.
That's right.